Medical traumas can happen to anyone, from children to the elderly. Thankfully, there's life-saving level 1 trauma care at University Medical Center of El Paso. Our nationally renowned trauma surgeons, neurosurgeons, and nurses are equipped with the most advanced, specialized technology in our industry. So when it comes to life-saving, expert care, our community relies on UMC, our region's only Level 1 trauma center. At UMC, we care for El Paso.
Someone that loves you is never going to hurt you physically or emotionally.
This is a lesson Devon Corral learned because of what happened to her mom.
I do remember going to my mom's funeral, but I didn't know who was inside of the casket. As like a little girl, you just want to make sense of like why your mom's not there anymore.
Devon's mother, Maria Mary Luisa Corral, was killed in 2005 by her boyfriend, Richard Flores, in a horrendous case of dating violence.
I want like my mom's story to be still known to this day because it's like this is very common. I don't think people know how common it is.
The murder of Mary Corral and her lasting impact in this episode of ABC7's Borderline Crimes. Maria, who was called Mary, was 17 when she began dating Richard Flores. Richard was 15. The high schoolers met at a mutual friend's house in 2001, according to Richard, and their relationship escalated quickly. Months after they began seeing each other, Mary was pregnant. She had a daughter in July 2002, then another baby girl in January 2004, and then a third little girl later that same year in October. Mary had three children with Richard by the time she was 20 years old. 6 months before she turned 21, she was dead. This is the news report from the weekend Mary was killed.
We are back on the scene of this murder, 7230 Dale Road. We are a lot closer than we were allowed to get yesterday. This is the home behind me, and this is where El Paso police say 19-year-old Richard Flores lives. He is now wanted for the murder of 20-year-old Maria Corral.
Mary's body was found the morning of April 29th, 2005, in the home where Richard Flores lived with his mother. The day before, April 28th, was Richard's birthday. He had turned 19, and he had thrown a big party for himself at his mom's place. His mother, Emeteria Hinojos, told police she didn't want him to have the party, and she told him so. Yes, it was a school night. April 28th was on a Thursday, but it was more so because Emeteria was afraid of Richard when he drank. In fact, she was so scared of her teenage son when he was drunk that she would drive to a friend's house and sleep in her van in order to avoid him. But Emeteria had to work that night, and when she got home, she found the party in full swing, so she drove off. She got to her house early the next morning. It was quiet. Richard and a couple of his friends were there asleep. Richard's mom woke him up and told him to go to school, but he refused. Emeteria didn't want to deal with him, so she left and returned an hour or so later. It was around that time when her neighbor, Jimmy Young, heard some commotion and saw police lights outside his neighbor's house. Jimmy went outside to see what was going on, and he was asked if he could translate Emeteria, who was speaking Spanish, for the police officer. And he laid out for the KVIA reporter what happened next in an interview from his front door.
of a sudden, and he had threatened that he was going to kill a girl. So she called the police to get advice what to do. So she was in the process of doing that. And she went upstairs to get out his clothes, and she screamed. And said somebody was in the closet. That's when I went upstairs to find out, and the officer followed me. And I thought it was somebody hiding in the closet. And so I started searching in the closet, and nobody's here. And so I moved some blankets around, and that was a big bag, so I pulled the bag, it was real heavy. And when I grabbed the bag real good, I felt a foot, some toes. So I told the officer, and he ushered me out.
Mary's body was wrapped in a sheet and garbage bags left in Richard's bedroom closet. Richard was the prime murder suspect, but he was nowhere to be found. And their three little girls now had no mom. The deadly end to a violent relationship was a shock to her family and friends, but sadly, it wasn't a surprise, not even to the neighbors.
We knew that they had problems. Everybody knew they had problems. It's just people don't want to talk. People don't want to talk because they don't want any problems.
You know, there was a lot of stuff leading up to it, a lot of behaviors on the part of Richard Flores against Mary.
That's Aaron Setliff.
She had gone back to him and left him, and he was violent with her. He was jealous. By some accounts, she was jealous, but he was always violent.
He was one of the assistant district attorneys who prosecuted the case. At the time, he was in the DA's domestic violence unit.
She had made the decision on many occasions to leave. There were police reports. There were other offenses that had been investigated. But she, over time, as many victims of domestic violence do, they make hard choices about staying with the one that they love, the father of their child, not having other options, a variety of things.
He spoke to Mary's mom, Maria, after her murder. Maria was granted custody of her three granddaughters before Mary died. That happened after a violent incident involving Mary and Richard that led police and Child Protective Services to intervene and remove the children from their care. Mary wanted to be near her girls, so she left Richard, got a job, and moved in with her mom.
Maria was hopeful that Mary was going to move on and had made the decision. One example is she just got a job at Kentucky Fried Chicken, mm-hmm. and had gotten her nameplate. She was so excited that she was like a professional now. So she was really sort of making something of herself and being able to move on.
Right.
By Maria's account, Mary was doing really well and looked really good and was just sort of blossoming again.
Mary even rebuffed Richard's invitation to his birthday party. Instead, Maria told police, her daughter went out with a girlfriend to go dancing. That made Richard angry. He was so angry, he even told someone at the party that he wanted to kill her. And he didn't change his mind even after Mary gave in to Richard's persistent texts and showed up to Richard's house late that night. The forensic examination showed that Mary had been beaten and strangled. She was bound and gagged with duct tape. She had bite marks on her nose. There was a cut to her underarm, but the medical examiner determined it happened after she died, indicating an attempt at dismemberment. There was another detail in the police report describing the crime scene that stuck with Setliff.
They found the KFC badge that I was telling you about and her ID and all the stuff like strewn out on the street. They took all of her other belongings and put them in a trash bag, just like she's nothing.
Police believed Richard was in Mexico. Their hunch proved correct when he was found and arrested across the border in the city of Juarez in September of 2005. But it wasn't until March 24th, 2006, nearly a year after Mary's murder, that Richard was extradited from Mexico to the United States and was at the police headquarters. Richard agreed to speak with detectives about what happened to Mary.
The exact facts of how it all happened from that point on are, if you believe the defendant, who confessed to the crime later, they went a certain way.
I obtained a copy of the video statement Richard gave to detectives. He spoke in Spanish, and he used a lot of foul language and slang. Voice actors are translating into English what was said. The first voice is the detective.
Let's go back. How did you meet Mary?
A long time ago.
How long ago, Richard?
I was a freshman, about 4 years, five. She liked, I don't know, I've always liked the best, and she liked my lifestyle. I would buy her all the clothes she wanted.
So you treated her right?
Yes.
You took care of her because you loved her?
Yes.
Did you love her?
Yes.
Richard, with his closely shaved head, loose white t-shirt, and baggy cream-colored pants, sat in the chair, crossing and uncrossing his legs. At times he hunched over, his face parallel with the floor, his elbows on the armrests of the chair or resting on his legs. Richard told detectives that Mary was jealous. Even knowing she was dead, he told detectives that he had pictures of his clothing that she cut up with scissors, and he accused her of hitting and scratching him. He denied ever hitting Mary during their relationship.
She started it.
And did you hit her? You never hit her?
No, never.
Only she would hit you.
The night of the party, Richard said he was expecting Mary to go by his house and that she invited him out dancing. He was with his friend, who he called Devil, and his cousin, known as Gordo, and they had been drinking at his house since getting out of school at 3:45.
I was waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and drinking, getting crazier and crazier. Crazier because she didn't arrive.
Getting crazier how?
With heroin and pills and beer. I took the pills and drank the beer to forget that she stood me up. We were wasted, and that's when I told them, when she gets here, we're gonna do what we're gonna do. You don't do anything. You just stay inside the closet and we're going to scare her.
Richard said when Mary showed up, he took her to his room and they had sex. Then he told Devil and Gordo to come out of the closet. He said they began binding her hands and feet with duct tape and taped over her mouth. Richard told police he slapped her half a dozen times on the face and was hitting her sides and then bit her on her face.
I even bit her nose. I told her, God damn it, I love you so much. Everything I've showed you, and still you do those f***ing things to me.
He told police he thought she cheated on him while he was in jail. I checked the court records to get a better idea of why and when he was in the El Paso County Jail, and get this. Richard Flores had been arrested nearly 1 year before Mary's murder on April 24th, 2004. He was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Court records state he threatened Mary with a pair of scissors. He pleaded guilty and served 5 months in jail. 6 months after being released, Flores was back in jail, this time charged with intoxicated manslaughter. He was accused of hitting and killing a pedestrian while driving drunk. That happened on March 9th, 2005, 7 weeks prior to the murder. Once again in custody, Richard told police that his friend Devil pulled him aside and said they should kill Mary because she might tell the authorities about the beating and they would get in trouble. He ultimately agreed, he said. Richard said Devil tried to suffocate Mary with a plastic bag, and that didn't work. He said Gordo got an extension cord, and Flores and Devil began choking Mary. The whole time, Flores told police, there was a song that he liked, playing in the background, playing on a loop. He mentioned it because he told officers he was watching the time tick as the song played, all while he pulled in the extension cord, telling police after Mary was dead, he hugged her, told her he would see her in hell, asked her why she did those things that made him upset. And what he said happened next is, quite frankly, sickening.
Devil hugs me and laughs, and he hugs me and tells me, happy birthday, homeboy.
Happy birthday, homeboy.
What a big present, man. And the two of them were saying, happy birthday. There's your present.
Happy birthday.
Flores talked about fleeing to Juarez after the murder, staying with Devil's family until Devil crossed back into El Paso from Juarez and was arrested at the port of entry, about how he sold drugs to get money to stay in hotels, about how he himself was addicted to roaches or Rohypnol, and about how he was afraid to turn himself in to police despite knowing they were looking for him. At the end of the interview, the detective asked Flores if there was anything else he wanted to add.
Let me ask a quick question. How many years do you think they'll give me for pulling the cord? You know my story. How much would you give me?
Richard Flores would get an answer to that question in August of 2007 during his murder trial. Cameras were not allowed in the courtroom, but KVIA ABC 7 reporters sat in on the trial, which lasted for a week.
While the defense opted to delay their opening statement, the prosecution wasted no time describing the abusive relationship between Richard Flores and Maria Corral. In their opening statement, the prosecutor said Mary was, quote, the perfect victim for domestic abuse. They said she was easily persuaded by Flores and that, like many domestic violence victims, Mary had left Flores many times but had come back. Mary's mother, Maria Corral, said, quote, Mary had a very ugly life with her boyfriend. He beat her, end quote. And she also remembers one night when she says Flores threatened Mary's life. Quote, I heard him say, if you don't go back home with me, I'm going to kill you.
The defense challenged the introduction of the police interview with Flores, but it was eventually shown to the jury, along with numerous other pieces of evidence.
The prosecution has presented more than 100 pieces of evidence so far. That includes bloodstained sheets, rolls of duct tape used in tying her limbs together, and several gruesome pictures. Still, a defense attorney for 21-year-old Richard Flores says the evidence hasn't fazed his team.
It really doesn't answer the question of who or how. Obviously, when you have a dead body or a person who is deceased, the cause of death and how it happened is there. And
Flores's family members are also at the trial. His cousin Emily said the tension between Flores and Corral, who had three children together, was always troublesome.
They were always fighting because of Mary.
Emily claims her cousin did what he could to keep things from getting violent.
He just called me and told me, you know what, I'm going to your house because she's fighting with me and I don't want to have trouble.
But the prosecution thinks otherwise. The testimony given by the victim's family on Monday says Flores had a history of violence. We tried speaking to Corral's family and the two assistant district attorneys on the case, but they all declined comment until the trial is over. Still, family doesn't think Flores killed his girlfriend.
Do you think your cousin killed her or no?
I don't think that, but.
Ultimately, the people who had to decide if Richard Flores was guilty or not were in the jury, and the 12 jurors decided he was guilty. The jury was also responsible for deciding just how long he would serve in prison. Remember, the uncertainty surrounding their decision had weighed on Flores's mind during his interview with detectives. And conversely, that moment during the interview weighed on Aaron Setliff, who presented the closing argument in the sentencing phase of the trial.
One of the biggest things that I took from his confession was he told the whole story about the ligature and about, you know, it. She just wasn't dying, and I played him music when I did it. And at the end he asked the detectives when he was talking to him, well, ¿cuántos años crees que me avienten? How many years do you think they're going to give me? So in my closing argument, that was my mantra over and over. How many years? How many years? He isolated her from friends and family. He was violent with her for many years. He was mean to his children. He was mean to Mary's family. He was a drug user, an alcohol abuser. He had previous offenses not even related to Mary. Like all of these things, how many years?
Richard Flores was sentenced to the maximum 99 years in prison. He's serving his time at the Cofield unit, which is more than 720 miles east of El Paso and a nearly two-hour drive southeast of Dallas. His appeals have been rejected, but he'll be eligible for parole in 12 years. The friend and cousin Flores implicated in the murder of Mary Corral were minors at the time of her death. ABC 7 reported in 2007 that no charges were filed against Julio Diablo de León, who was 15, and Guillermo Gordo Palma, who was 13. The county attorney's office handles juvenile cases and stated to ABC 7 it had no evidence against either teen, and Flores' statement isn't admissible because of their ages. But there is no statute of limitations on murder charges, meaning if evidence were to come to light, the two could be tried. Aaron Setliff left the DA's office shortly after the trial, but Mary's death stayed on his mind. He worked with the Texas Council on Family Violence to lobby the state to increase strangulation from a misdemeanor offense to a felony.
It started out as a misdemeanor. Until she died with a ligature, it could have been charged as a misdemeanor. That's been a game changer across Texas when it comes to prosecution, because strangulation is the kind of offense that, in order to do it, it's very close, it's very intimate. It's not the first time that someone is being abused if they're being strangled. There's been a whole series of behaviors that has led up to that. And you experience injuries that nobody can tell, and they can lead to even death within days. And no one, you may not even have a ligature mark or bruises or whatever. So strangulation is such a big deal that we needed to take it seriously. And I think that has really been a game changer since back in 2005. There has to be a community that takes the behavior seriously, because none of this happens just like, how did this happen? Like, you look at this murder and there were signs along the way that things could have been done, that we could have taken steps to empower Mary to make better choices, to help her move forward without violence.
Unfortunately, nothing can be done to bring Mary back. But a piece of her lives on in her three daughters.
That's why I'm so grateful for her. Even though she's not here, I know she's still raising us as much as she can.
Devon Corral is the oldest. She's now 21, older than her mother was when she died.
I want to believe that my mom is in a good place now.
She was not even 3 years old when her mom was killed.
And I do remember going to my mom's funeral, but I didn't know who was inside of the casket.
Devon told me she hasn't really talked publicly about what happened to her mom.
I lost my mom, right? So that was my whole life. And it was like, it did hurt. Like, when in school, like, people don't think about it, but like for Mother's Day, like just seeing everybody with their moms, and like I don't have mine, so it did affect us a lot.
Devon and her two younger sisters were raised by her mom's mother, Maria, and she often refers to Maria as her mom. Devon said her grandma often deflected her questions about how her mom died and why her dad was in prison, never putting two and two together.
She never really told us anything until I turned, I want to say, almost around my 18th birthday. So it was like my whole life I didn't know what really happened.
She found out that her father killed her mother the day before she turned 18, she told me. I could still see the pain in her face as she retold the story 3 years after she found out.
And I would have nightmares, and I never really knew how much something like that could affect someone.
She said her grandmother wanted to protect her and her sisters from the gruesome details, but Devon learned many of them by searching her dad's name online.
He knew what he did, and he knew he left me and my sisters without neither of them.
She doesn't talk to her dad, and doesn't really talk to his family. She's focused on putting herself through school so she can work in the medical field, and on raising her 6-month-old son.
My mom sent me him. This baby looks exactly like me as when I was a baby.
She's a young adult with a full personal understanding of the dangers of staying in a violent relationship.
I feel like if they knew what really goes on behind other closed doors, where like some people don't make it, they would leave.
As painful as it was to talk about it, she told me she knew getting this message out was important.
You know, I want like my mom's story to be still known to this day, because it's like this is very common. I don't think people know how common it is.
It's something Devon wished her mom had known.
That's the only reason I want to continue talking about it, is because I just want girls to know, like, they could really do it on their own. A baby will never stop you. That should be your biggest motivation to leave. And that should be your motivation to work harder for the things that you want.
Borderland Crimes is a podcast researched, produced, and edited by me, Stephanie Valle. KVIA production manager Eddie Urquiza was responsible for finding the archive footage. KVIA executive producer Jesus Rodriguez and assistant news director Larry Morales were the voice actors. Thanks to Aaron Setliff for asking if I could highlight Mary's case on the podcast to shed light on dating violence. According to a database compiled by the National Domestic Violence Hotline, 1.5 million high school students are targets of dating violence each year. Nearly 1 in 3 girls in the U.S. is a target, and the highest rate of dating violence occurs in females between the ages of 16 and 24. And thank you to Devon Corral for understanding that her voice can deliver a message more powerfully than even the best professional advocate. Thanks for listening, and be sure to like and subscribe.
Medical traumas can happen to anyone, from children to the elderly. Thankfully, there's life-saving level 1 trauma care at University Medical Center of El Paso. Our nationally renowned trauma surgeons, neurosurgeons, and nurses are equipped with the most advanced, specialized technology in our industry. So when it comes to life-saving, expert care, our community relies on UMC, our region's only level 1 trauma center. At UMC, we care for El Paso.